Richie and John, we're here to surprise. Freedom and pride, we're living out loud, celebrating our community with a vibrant crowd. Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, a fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see.
From the Mutual Broadcasting System, this is the voice of LGBTQ plus news and life-focused content. The Richie and John podcast. No bullshit, just reality for the community and allies around the globe. Here are your hosts, infinitely wiser, smarter and kinder than everyone in the Trump administration. Combined, definitely uncensored, even if they are not uncut. Richie Roy and John McMullen. Give them hell, boys.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Richie and John. We are back. It is the summer, and we have lots of stuff to talk about. I was just in Montreal this last weekend for the first time, which was very fun, and it was nice to be in Canada. I kind of was like, should I just stay here maybe? especially because I kind of had my phone on airplane mode. Basically kind of the whole time. And then when I crossed the border and I turned off airplane mode and I saw all the things, the news and stuff, I was like, I kind of liked it better when I was in airplane mode in Canada.
Probably would like it so much better if I would just do the same thing when I travel.
Yeah, it was nice. But anyway, so we've got lots of stories to bring to you. It is Pride season, of course, also. And I'm here with, of course, John McMullen. John, how are you doing?
I'm good. And I'm actually doing this episode of our show for the first time from our new studio. It's still not done, but it's done enough that we're able to actually do the show from here this episode. And it's different for me. This episode, I am actually doing the program standing up, which is how I like to do talk shows. And I spent many years working in studios that were mostly stand-up situations. You know, you got a stool there if you have to sit down. But I feel like, you know, you project better. And I don't know, I like doing a show standing up. So it's great to be in that circumstance. We set it up in such a way that it's on a big L-shaped console that is on a motor, so we can actually raise the height and go back down and things like that. So if we want to sit down, we can. But I can't wait for you to get an opportunity to come back out to Palm Springs and to check out our new digs.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, a standing desk. Okay, I like that. So yeah, that we have our new HQ, which is exciting. And the Hudson Valley HQ is the same as before, which is a tiny desk in the corner of a small room. And it's raining here, so if the internet cuts out at any point during the broadcast, I apologize because I also am on spotty internet. But in any case, we will bring you some stories today, the latest and greatest, or not so greatest, depending.
Can we take just a second before we get into them? Because I note that there's not one of them that involves this particular thing, but I do want to say, having been very involved in participating in our local Palm Springs, I guess you'd say chapter maybe, of the No Kings Day events around the country, some 2,100 of them, I think, that they're counting, and estimating crowd size at somewhere between 5 and 8 million people who participated across the country. It was incredible. It was just such a really reassuring. I mean, you know, when people stay home who are all about wanting to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes we made before, and you don't know. You hope that your neighbors, that your friends, that, you know, the people live across the street and across town from you share your values. And when you see what I saw, which was just a sea of people, I mean, I think our largest crowd at one of these types of events in the past was like around 2,000, 2,500 people. It was easily 5,000 to 6,000 people here in Palm Springs at the downtown city park. It was packed. It was across the street and up the steps, and people sitting in front of the Palm Springs Art Museum. And it was such a really incredible experience to be surrounded by all these people who are fighting for us to be able to live in a country that respects people for their individualism and, you know, for their wanting to preserve democracy.
Yeah.
It's just a really great experience. And I hope that wherever you were, you had an opportunity to take part. If you did, I hope that it was a safe event. There were very few safety issues. There were some, of course. But I hope that you had a good time, and I hope that you encourage other people to take part in future events, because I think the message was loud and clear on a day that somebody had next to no turnout at his $40 million.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was really remarkable to see the side-by-sides on social media, because you know that because that person, the current president, is all about optics and all about how things look. And you know he had this idea of what this parade would be like. Mm-hmm. And you look at the videos and it was the saddest podunk thing. The marching was sloppy. The crowds were thin. Like, no one was into it. It was like just visually terrible. They're already posting doctored images on social media. I don't know if you saw this. Photoshopped images of like cut and paste crowds up by the Washington Monument that weren't there really, you know, absolutely North Korea style. But yeah, by comparison, you see, you know, even in the smallest town in Alabama, you know, everyone, there were three people in town and somehow six people came out to the No Kings protest. So
yeah, it was really, I think, one of those things that should help all of us. And I don't mean just in the LGBTQ community, but I mean, those of us who value, a society that plays along with what our Constitution promises us. It should give you hope, renewed hope, that we can fix this, because there are a lot of people on our side and not so many people on their side. And yes, they have a lot of power right now, but I'll tell you what, you take one of those photographs with the grand leader and he did not look happy. At all. I mean, I saw, in fact, there was one video clip I saw somewhere where it had a look of his wife who, while looking kind of at him, was, you know, kind of even faced. But by the time she turned her head the other way, she was just, it was just like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Well, you can almost kind of tell actually how pissed the current president is by which shade of bronzer he's wearing. And like the past couple of days, he looks like Al Jolson in The Jazz Singer. I mean, he is wearing shoe polish on his face. It is astounding. He is pissed.
Yeah. Well, let's keep it up, folks. Let's just keep it up. Keep doing the same great job and have fun with this. And don't turn to violence. Don't participate in things that are going to get you in trouble needlessly, because we're obviously striking a nerve without having to do that.
Absolutely.
So anyway, to our stories, of which, we have a story that once again treads on our trans community.
Right. And in so doing, also turns out to just tread on women. So the Trump administration has been facing criticism for quietly using anti-trans executive orders to roll back longstanding sports protections for all girls. The administration has been targeting Title IX provisions that allow students to join opposite sex teams when their school doesn't offer one for their gender. Through, weirdly, the Department of Energy, the administration is seeking to eliminate those protections, arguing that the rules ignore biological sex differences, which is their whole thing. Gender doesn't exist. It's all about sex. Critics accuse officials of misusing a loophole called direct final rule, because normally when you do rulemaking, there's a whole process. It's a notice and comment, and it takes a while. And direct final rule is really designed for minor little tweaks here and there. They're using direct final rule here to try to ram through a major change, and in so doing, bypass the standard 60-day public comment period. Thousands spoke out against the change before the June deadline, but their comments are not publicly available. They are currently hidden. Advocates warn that this move doesn't just impact trans athletes. It also prevents cisgender girls from playing on boys' teams when no girls' team exists. Experts say that this sets a dangerous precedent, potentially dismantling broader civil rights protections and harming women's opportunities in school sports programs nationwide. Not surprising, you know, when you look at the rhetoric here. I mean, first of all, you know, Project 2025, they just read the Handmaid's Tale and they're like, let's do that, you know?
Exactly.
And so really, it is kind of, a lot of the language that they use to talk about protecting women, protecting girls, is when you look at their actual actions, is extremely sexist and really about not doing anything of the sort. When you look at them stripping sort of women who are in senior positions in military of their positions, firing them, and various, you know, sort of different actions they're taking. Ultimately, this is not an administration that values any woman, trans or cis, really. And so the idea that by targeting trans women, trans girls, that they are also immiserating and making life more difficult for cis girls, they don't care about that. Why would they care about that? That's part of the plan. That's just sort of like a bonus, actually. You know, I think this just, again, just kind of shows this Title IX stuff. They are weaponizing Title IX in all these ways. It was never meant to be used. And same thing with Title VI. And it's a way, again, to bludgeon education, higher ed especially, but also not higher ed, because Title IX stuff, you know, also I think applies in things like high school settings. So it's not surprising, actually, that in targeting trans women and trans girls, that they are also just making life suck for all girls.
Yeah, well, why would he care? Why would they care? We have women who are going to die because they can't have abortions. And even when they want the child, they're forced to carry it through because of other medical complications and things like that. But, you know, that's just an unfortunate casualty. That's mm-hmm. not the grand leader. He doesn't have to lose his life for that.
Right. I mean, and you know, there's the case, and I wish I kind of had the woman's name off the top of my head, and I don't, but there's this current situation where there is a woman who is in a hospital. She is brain dead. She's been declared brain dead. She has a fetus growing in her body, and the state is disallowing them to pull the plug on this woman who is there dead because they want to essentially use her body to grow the baby and eventually take the baby out, and then the baby will be a baby. It's that gruesome. The family doesn't want it. The family doesn't want it. It is something that is appalling, but the state is basically saying that they just have to keep this dead woman on life support to grow a fetus inside of this dead woman's body. It's completely disgusting.
That, honestly, a lot of the decisions that have been made along this are based on faith-based missions or goals towards these rights or lack thereof. And it seems to me that if anything, in a natural situation, if somebody dies and they had, you know, baby on board, the child would die too with them.
Right.
And I get why there's certain times and situations where they want to try and preserve, you know, perhaps getting a child out that's ready to be born, you know, in an emergency situation. But, you know, to keep somebody alive just so that they're basically, you know, some sort of a unit to provide this child a life,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me that that too flies in the face of if you believe in God. So, you know, it's not part of the natural order of things for that individual. At least that would be right. My take on it. Those stories just horrify me.
It's gruesome. Yeah, so the woman's name is Adriana Smith. The baby actually was, I think it was even today, actually, the baby was delivered by emergency C-section from the brain-dead woman's body. The baby weighed 1 pound, 13 ounces, is in the neonatal intensive care unit. And yeah, the family is going to discontinue life support for the brain dead woman, Adriana Smith, because they never wanted this to be the case. Like, It's just, it's the idea that this, you know, that this is the Republicans are the party of life and all of this, and also the party
of individuals, until you're born,
and the party of individual freedoms. The idea that the state can mandate that someone, you know, going back to, you know, time immemorial, you look at things like, you know, the Iliad or something. Death is something that is generally, I think, quite sacred. Life and death is something that's generally a sacred thing and something that is really a family issue and a permanent or a personal issue. That is, that the state of Georgia can just say, nope, family, we don't care what you think. You're going to keep this dead woman on a ventilator so that we can harvest the baby out of her. Is like so, like, it's dystopian. It's like out of a science fiction novel.
And in 18 years from now, are they going to take care of that child and make sure that that child, or over the next 18 years, that that child is going to have a, you know, appropriate upbringing and that they're not going to be in poverty and, you know,
of course
not. Come on. They only care about taking care of them while they're, you know, goo and, you know, fresh skin.
It really, yeah. I mean, it is the height of hypocrisy, and
they are not anyway. The party of life.
So they're not the party of life, and they're not the party of women, despite their rhetoric to that point. And that's why in this story, of course, the collateral damage of girls who just want to play sports being unable to do so now because of anti-trans sentiments by this administration it's not surprising.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's go down to Florida for a few. A man there is facing charges after trying to enter a pride event armed with a loaded gun. Yeah, police arrested 31-year-old Michael Monheit. This happened last Saturday in Wilton Manors after he triggered a metal detector alarm at a Stonewall Pride parade. Authorities say that Monheit ignored officers' commands that he continued to attempt to force his way into the crowded event, like he was going to get anywhere. Officers quickly detained him. They found a loaded Glock handgun and two fully loaded magazines in his pockets. Now, I don't know about you, but I usually feel safe so long as I have at least just one magazine in my pocket when I go to a pride event.
What magazine is that? Inches or Honcho?
Exactly. Investigators discovered Monheit previously lost his concealed carry permit. And that happened after he was being involuntarily committed to a mental health facility. He had some concerns there. He has also got a history with troubling past, including a 2016 arrest for reckless driving. And lo and behold, firing a gun near neighbors, of course. Wilton Manors officials, they credit increased security measures, including metal detectors, for preventing potential tragedy, and police say that they're still investigating his motive. Meanwhile, city leaders emphasize that safety protocols successfully stopped a dangerous situation, protecting thousands gathered to celebrate LGBTQ+ pride. And I'm sure that we'll hear from Ron DeSantis that, you know, there was nothing wrong with him going loaded to the gills with a killing machine to an event like this, because after all, it was just a gay event and no big loss.
Right. I mean, so for those of you who don't know what Wilton Manors is, Wilton Manors is like this like little gay village within Fort Lauderdale. You know, hearing this story, and first of all, I'm glad they had the metal detectors. You know, it's a bummer that we live in a world now where you have to have metal detectors at a pride, but I'm glad they were there. But it made me think, you know, maybe they should have, you know, like between, you know, in Berlin, they had Checkpoint Charlie. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Wilton Manors should have Checkpoint Cocksock. When you approach Wilton Manors, you have to show your bona fides that you are a card carrying homosexual to get in
and
there.
And by bona fide, you do mean boner.
Boner fides. Yeah, exactly. You know, because in all seriousness, no, I mean, this, it could have been awful. This really could have been a terrible situation. Someone who has a history of mental instability and gun violence, bringing two magazines and a Glock to Pride.
And not long after the anniversary, of course, of the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Correct. Correct. So, yeah. So I'm glad that that they did have security in place for that.
You know what I'm glad about? I'm glad that I do this show with a lawyer, because our next story actually might need you to opine on the fact that, again, the president has been slammed by a federal judge.
This is true. It's happening quite a lot, actually, it turns out. So a federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to immediately restore billions of dollars in diversity and LGBTQ-related research grants. Judge William Young ruled that President Trump's freeze on $2.4 billion in National Institutes of Health grants, NIH grants, amount to clear discrimination against racial minorities and the LGBTQ community. Young, a Reagan appointee, sharply criticized the Trump administration, questioning whether the government had lost its sense of shame. It was like, it was literally a, like, have you no shame? Have you no decency? Was like literally what the judge said.
Yeah.
16 states and multiple research organizations sued the Trump administration earlier this year, calling the president's cuts an ideological purge that threatened public health. Researchers say the cuts violate free speech protections and overstep executive authority, since only Congress can control budget spending. Judge Young said he will consider a broader ruling soon, possibly striking down Trump's anti-diversity initiatives entirely. The ruling is the latest in several recent legal decisions against the Trump administration's attempts to block funding for LGBTQ and diversity-related programs. The White House has not yet responded to the court's decision. I'm sure they will, but yeah, you know, it is a long string now, a pretty almost unbroken string of federal courts saying that all of the mayhem that this administration has been doing since it got in power, like January 20th, almost all of it has been in contravention of federal law and is not acceptable, is unconstitutional, has not been through the proper channels, you name it. And the thing is, this is, I mean, I'm glad the courts are doing, the courts are standing up, but it's not surprising because this is a classic Trump situation. Even when he was in private, you know, business, is you do a bunch of shit you know is wrong and you know is illegal, and you wait for someone to sue you, and then you drag things through the courts and slow it down and wait and wait and wait, and it's like this game of attrition, you know? If you illegally fire 40,000 federal employees, it's going to take several months and maybe even years for that illegal decision to work its way through the courts and appeals and everything. Meanwhile, a lot of those people are going to walk away. They're going to get other jobs. They're going to just drop out. And then you win anyway. So I'm really glad that the courts are standing strong here on clearly illegal actions. But yeah, this is just this makes perfect sense, you know, of how they are this kind of shock and awe, you know, flood the zone, all that stuff. And Judge William Young, a Reagan appointee, good for you.
But the good news is that we're doing a hell of a lot. Do you remember that term that he used in his first go round as president? He talked about all the winning. All the winning that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Who's doing all the winning right now? We, the people in our justice system. And at some point, we will have enough control back to hopefully fortify those laws that are on the books and to make it so that people who do the kind of shenanigans that he has been up to will actually have some meaningful penalties and means of removing them from being able to do what he has done repeatedly, mm-hmm. because this is such an abuse of our justice system.
It really is. And the thing that's interesting, though, when you mentioned the wins and the losses, is we live in a really interesting moment in terms of knowing about wins and losses, because we know about these losses. You know, if you're interested and you're paying attention, they are getting their asses handed to them by courts and all kinds of things. If you listen to Fox News or social media on the right or their spokeswoman or Trump or any of them, Stephen Miller, they'll literally just say the craziest lies, like straightforward. Like they'll be like, since he has been in office, they're like, eggs are cheaper. Like jobs are up. they just basically will like say all of these, you know, the price of steel's down, gas is cheaper. And it's like each one of them is like undeniably a lie and wrong and easily can be like, there's no gray area, but they'll just sort of say these things like in these broad these North Korea way, you know? And I think there's probably 30% of the population that will just run with that and be like, yeah, he's winning. You know, yeah, our egg prices are cheaper, even though their eyes show that it's not true.
I heard it come out of my speakers and I saw the lips moving on TV. It must be true.
Right. It's like, what's that phrase? Do you trust me or your lying eyes? You know, I mean, people, you know, he'll say things like gas is now $1.95 a gallon. He'll just say that, you know, when he's
island where the penguins live.
Right. And meanwhile, no one has seen that. But anyway, yeah. So we're living in a world where some people's truth is just not the truth. But we know the truth. And the truth is that the federal courts are saying, try again, asshole.
Our next story actually melts the skin off my bones. Mm-hmm. Having friends and family members who have served our country quite honorably. Some made an entire career out of it. Others who did one or two tours. And when I read about things like this, it just makes me go crazy. As a human, as a taxpayer, as an American citizen. But a controversial new policy at the Veteran Affairs Hospitals is raising alarm among veterans and medical ethics experts. The Guardian is reporting that updated VA guidelines now allow doctors to refuse treatment based on a patient's political affiliation or marital status. What? Previously, VA rules explicitly protected veterans from discrimination in medical care based on politics, marital status, or sexual orientation. Critics worry that this change could severely impact women, LGBTQ veterans, and those in rural communities with limited care options. VA officials insist that all veterans will continue receiving the services that they're entitled to by law. By law, that's probably the key word here, because if they change the law, you know, what does it mean? You know, not by the law that existed pre-Donald Trump. Anyway, they deny that the new guidelines are going to permit discrimination, calling the Guardian's reporting inaccurate and politically biased. Yet, medical ethics specialists call the policy troubling and unethical, and they warn that it could lead to doctors denying care based on a patient's political views or lifestyle or orientation. And the VA maintains that these updated guidelines follow a recent White House executive order, but insists that no veteran will lose access to care. And we know that if they say so, it's going to be the truth, right?
Absolutely. Wrong. Yeah. So this one, you know, they, so this story, I agree with you, is so alarming because, you know, they're saying, oh, nothing's going to change, but they have explicitly taken away protections that existed before. And what that does is a couple things. One, it signals to people who might have wanted to discriminate before, you can do it now. And where this is really gonna, this is, I think, where the rubber is gonna meet the road on this stuff is in rural places, in red states, you know, where, like, let's say that, and it kind of brings to mind some of the issues that we've had in the past with religious objections from pharmacists to providing certain types of medicine.
Exactly.
Which, because of the magic of religion, a pharmacist can say, I'm not going to give you Plan B. I'm not going to give you PrEP. I'm not going to give you estrogen because you're trans, or because you're going to, you know, use it for family planning or whatever. It's the same thing is, you know, if some jerky doctor at some small VA clinic somewhere in a red state, you know, knows that you're a Trump hater, you know, a Trump hating veteran. There are many of them. And you go in there, they could say, you know what? Like, I'm not going to give you care. You can go somewhere else. Somewhere else might be 8 hours away. It might be 12 hours away. you know? So to give the discretion to individual VA doctors and providers to say, you're a gay veteran, I'm not going to treat you. You're a Democrat, you're a Trump-hating veteran, I'm not going to treat you. You're unmarried, you're a single veteran, whatever.
You're married to a guy or married to a girl and you're the same gender.
It's a license for individual jerky practitioners to make life miserable for veterans who are using a service that they are entitled to. And just for purely, literally just for purely ideological jerky reasons.
You know, I think I'm going to ask our military correspondent, James Appadale, who was just with us in the past couple of weeks, to try and make contact with somebody who might be able to join us from the VA and talk about this and how it is really impacting, queer veterans.
And the thing is, why it's so pernicious, though, is, you know, in all their things, they're, you know, in all of these statements, they're saying, you know, you will still get the care. You know, nothing's going to change. It's just a little tweak.
Right.
But what this means is that this is where the press, like press and social media and all those come in, because what will happen is this rule change will affect individuals 100%. But it's whether that those individual moments, those individual experiences can percolate up so people know what is actually happening.
You know, when I hear somebody say something like that, what I hear is basically the ringing again of, we don't know anything about this Project 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everything that's happened has been basically from that playbook.
Moving on to a different story. You know, the VA is saying, of course, that nothing's going to change. We know it will change. But you know what? Maybe it's fine. You know, because gays have achieved equality already, and normal gays are Trump voters anyway, right?
Are you crazy?
I'm not crazy, but Richard Grenell sure is. So yeah. A prominent gay Trump official is drawing criticism after claiming that LGBTQ people have already achieved equality in America. We did it. Mission accomplished. Just
wow.
Just like George W. with the little banner, right?
Right.
In a recent interview with Politico, former Trump administration official Richard Grenell says that gay men and lesbians have largely won equal rights. He argued that so-called, quote, normal gays now support Donald Trump and Republicans, claiming that only the, quote, fringe gay left still pushes for LGBTQ issues.
Grenell, you mean also, the 99 and 44 100% of us?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So Grenell also called pride parades embarrassing, describing them as overly sexualized and, you know, and again, lunatic fringe. He says that LGBTQ people should be promoting, quote, normality, not radical views. Critics point out, of course, LGBTQ Americans still lack many federal protections and state protections for sure. Advocates stress that Congress has not passed comprehensive anti-discrimination laws. And many states are actively rolling back LGBTQ rights and limiting discussions of LGBTQ topics in schools. In addition, transgender people, as we talk about on this show every goddamn week, currently face widespread legislative attacks at the state level and increasingly also in this current administration. Despite Grenell's comments, actual LGBTQ advocates say that equality remains far from reality, with many queer Americans continuing to face discrimination and hostility in their everyday lives, just like we document every Tuesday.
I would love to have this guy, Grenell, join us for an hour and to talk to him about his definition of normality, because I don't know, when I hear somebody like him make a statement like that, I'm thinking, I wonder if he means the normality of the cisgender, white, male, Trump-voting, mega lunatic who supports the idea of lynching black people.
It's a mind-bender. Because the thing is, I think what he's saying when he says LGBTQ people should be promoting normality is, I think what he's saying, maybe, I think, is like, two white gay dudes getting a house in the suburbs and doing that. Except that's something that they didn't
fight
for.
I think you're giving him too much credit by adding the BTQ on your statement there, because I have a feeling he also means by normal that he's talking about, you know, just the gay gays.
That's what I'm saying.
The fags and the dykes, any of the rest of the gays.
That's what I was saying. He's talking about gay white men moving to the suburbs together, two of them in a monogamous gay couple and working for maybe Raytheon. You know, that's normalcy.
Be careful. I actually have a friend who just retired from Raytheon, who is a straight white male. And you know what? He just moved to Mazatlan with his sailboat.
There you go. But yeah, so, you know, I think that when he's talking about normality or normalcy or whatever, what he's talking about is sort of heteronormative gay men and maybe lesbians. But flashback not that long ago, those people couldn't get married either. And
why couldn't you just be fucked up like me?
Right. And even then, like even that normality he's talking about is something that they are Project 2025 and the people, the Republicans, want to overturn. So the normality he's even trumpeting is not something that they actually want. Republicans are actively chomping at the bit to get Obergefell back up at the Supreme Court so that Scalia and Thomas and the cretins that go with them can say, whoops, we made a mistake. Actually, gay marriage is gone. So he's not even internally consistent. He's just full of shit is what he is.
Yeah.
Yep.
We should send him some toilet paper for wiping his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, he's 2025 version of a log cabin, you know, who have always been the saddest sacks because they're trying desperately to be friends with people who don't even want them to exist. You know, you see like AIPAC or whatever, CPAC. Or was it? CPAC. Is it CPAC?
Yeah.
CPAC. Every year at CPAC, the log cabins are like, please let us come. We want to be gay conservatives. And the CPAC's like, ew, get out of here. And then every year they're like, well, maybe next year. It's so stupid.
I'm a fucking idiot.
So back at the courts, tell us about what happened in your
neck of the woods.
What was that?
I said, let's go back to my old neck of the woods.
Tell us about what happened in your home state.
A federal appeals court has ruled against a Washington state spa that refused service to a transgender woman. Olympus Spa, a women-only facility, which is in Linwood, which is roughly about 20 minutes north of Seattle, argued that the state's anti-discrimination law violated its free speech, religion, and association rights. The case began when Haven Wilvich, a transgender woman, complained after the spa denied her entry due to her anatomy. The spa allows transgender women, that's nice, but they have to have undergone gender-affirming surgery first, but they exclude others to uphold Christian beliefs about modesty. I can't believe that they accept transgender women and they're making this based on their Christian beliefs about modesty. The whole thing just does not make sense at all. But the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rejects the spa's First Amendment claims, emphasizing that public businesses must comply with anti-discrimination laws. The court says that requiring a business to follow state law does not violate constitutional rights, comparing it to removing a whites-only sign. Makes sense to me. In dissent, Judge Kenneth Lee argued that the ruling unfairly targets a longstanding business practice and disproportionately affects Asian American communities. The spa's attorneys plan to request another hearing before the full appeals court.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is... It's a tightrope, I think, to try and make the argument that they don't have to abide by, you know, as a public accommodation, that they don't have to follow those rules. You know, they're not a religious-based business.
Mm-hmm.
They're a place where people go probably with the hope of being able to fuck each other in there. So I don't know about this thing about Christian beliefs and modesty.
Right. So I think what this is, you know, I did some kind of like reading around.
Is it a Korean spa?
It's a Korean spa. And, you know, especially sort of there's a strong strain of Christian belief in the Korean, especially Korean American community. It's a big mm-hmm. thing. Yeah. So what I imagine it is that it's a spa owned by Korean Americans. And I think when they talk about modesty, honestly, here's what I think they're thinking. Is that women have vaginas, men have penises, and that's it. And so, you know, this whole idea that a trans woman who has had gender-affirming surgery is welcome, but one who has not is not, is I think that they're literally, it's this idea that dick...
We better not see a bulge.
...is determined.
On the chest and on the crotch.
Yeah, and so, you know... It's not where it's 2025 girls, like, come on. But, you know, again, the Ninth Circuit, I think, you know, again, came out on the right side here. And
a court in the federal circuit that was going to do something like that, it would be the Ninth.
I mean, yes.
They've clearly always been the leader on progressive stances, you know, with a number of things.
Yeah. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. You know, obviously they are appealing. Or they're requesting to have this heard en banc, which is when the full Court of Appeals will hear a case again. Sometimes this happens. And probably we'll see this might be something that, depending on their interests, that right-wing agitators, legal agitators, will try to set up a circuit split and bring up a similar case in a different jurisdiction, make it so that the law, so that they come out in different ways, and then try to get that up to the Supreme Court, hoping and assuming, and probably correctly so, that this current Supreme Court will say, no, actually, like, it's religion. You just wave religion across anything, and then you get to discriminate. So more to come on this. This is not the last we're going to hear about this one.
No, I don't think so either. Well, listen, we would love to hear from you, and there are usually plenty of ways to get in touch with us, but I think the fastest way for you to get in touch with us at this point is to simply send us an email, and you can do that. You can write to us at feedback@richieandjohn.com or info@richieandjohn.com. You can write to either one of us individually. We do welcome sexual solicitations. No, I'm kidding. But it's richie@richieandjohn.com or John, J-O-H-N, @richieandjohn.com. So that is the best way to get a hold of us right now. Once we have all of our phone lines back in working order and all that here in our new studios, we will give you information on how you can participate vocally in this as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm also working on a way that you can submit videos to us to be incorporated into the program and be able to sound off on things that matter to you. We, of course, want to hear your ideas for guests and topics, and if there's stories that we're not hearing about that maybe you have an opportunity to eyewitness, you know, let us know about it.
Absolutely. And if you think you might be a good guest for us, reach out to us too. We've got really interesting listenership, and I know there are folks out there who are advocates who are working on really interesting stuff. If you're a listener, or even better, a subscriber, and think that you might have something, you know, that we could talk about, reach out to us too on that. You know, we're always looking for guests for Substantial Saturday. That is when we delve into issues in depth. So reach out, and we'd love to hear from you. Absolutely.
Well, Richard, I will see you this Saturday for our next episode when we do another Substantial Saturday on the Richie and John Show.
Absolutely. And I think I may actually be doing that one from your hometown.
Oh, that's right. You're headed to Seattle.
What was that?
Just ahead of Pride there.
Just ahead of Pride, yeah. I'm going there for work, but I'm excited. I've not been to Seattle since I was a little tot, so I've not seen it in many years. I have not sampled the what looks to be amazing cuisine.
I will send you some recommendations that you
please
must try.
Do. But yeah, so we're going to have fun. So I might be recording rarely in the same time zone as John for Substantial Saturday. But until then, cool. Have a great week, and we will see you then.
Richie and John is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests. If you have a problem with it, bugger off.
Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see. Truth, just you listen and see.